Hi everyone, I'm Tanya, I'm an alcoholic.
Hi Tanya.
And I'm Colleen, I'm an alcoholic. I'd like to thank you for this opportunity. When I was asked to speak and we ended up with this chapter, I felt a lot of fear. Because of where I am with my family and, you know, it's through, actually a saying that came up in this book, for the first time in my life I found myself surrounded by people I could really relate with, and I see you, all of you, as my family also, and there's so many different perspectives that I'm able to look at this chapter from that I truly appreciate it, and that's actually how Tanya and I searched and searched and found this family, and have tried to take that enthusiasm back to Hoboken. So thank you for this opportunity.
Yeah, I want to just say it's such an honor to be up here, and thank you, Mary Beth, for asking us to speak. When she first asked us to speak, I was so excited, and then she said the family afterward, and I said, "Eek! I'm divorced. I live alone." I'm like, "What family?" But same thing as Colleen was saying. I have a lot of different perspectives on this chapter as well, and I have a lot of new family. Just looking out at all of you, I mean, Noelle and Nora, and all the support from Hoboken here tonight, and Amy, who's from Oklahoma. It's just amazing how God works through other people. Amy came from Oklahoma into Hoboken for 6 short months and really just turned my world upside down. I thought AA only existed in Hoboken, and we started going on all these road trips. And at the same time, I met Colleen. And the past year of my life has been incredible, just incredible. It's been the best year of my life. And Howard from Berkeley Heights. I've met so many people that have just opened up the solution for me, and I don't have to live miserably anymore. And then God bring Colleen in my life. She's like my sister. And I just want to tell a short story before we get started. when we first met, actually a few months ago, we were decided we wanted to put a meeting together in Hoboken, and so we got together to start working on the script and putting the meeting together, and Colleen shows up, and she's got like this folder filled of all these plastic leaflets and color coding and post-its and pens in every shade and, you know, highlighters, and I show up and I've got my big book with me and we start working and we really compliment each other, and the meeting is now off and running and it's doing really well. And so a few nights ago, we were getting together to work on this chapter, and I showed up, and my book had about, I would say, like 30 or 40 post-its sticking out from all different directions. And she's like, "Oh, no, you've turned into me." And she didn't have any post-its. Anyway,
so
with that, there are a lot of beautiful spiritual principles that I found in this chapter, love and tolerance being one of them, patience, understanding, kindness, being selfless, self-forgetting, and giving, and just wonderful spiritual principles. So with that, I'm going to start on the top of page 122. Our women folk have suggested certain attitudes a wife may take with a husband who is recovering, hasn't worked all the steps yet. Perhaps they created the impression that he's to be wrapped in cotton wool and placed on a pedestal. Successful readjustment means the opposite. All members of the family should meet upon the common ground of tolerance, understanding, and love. And for me, this starts with my concept of God. My concept of God is that He is the director, He is my father, He is the principal, I am His agent, I am His child. And when I think about God in that sense, I think about all of you as my brothers and sisters. So it's easier for me to be loving and tolerant. Not all the time. Not all the time. But I ask God a lot to help me play nice with my brothers and sisters. What would you have me do here, Father? Skipping down to the end of that paragraph, we find the more one member of the family demands that the others concede to him, the more resentful they become. This makes for discord and unhappiness. You see, a lot of people are living on self-will. Not just the alcoholic is spiritually sick. Next paragraph. And why? Is it not because each wants to play the lead? Is not each trying to arrange the family show to his liking? Is he not unconsciously trying to see what he can take from the family life rather than give? So most people try to live by self-propulsion. And I know for me, when I was living in self-will, I was always at odds with someone or something. I love this next line. Cessation of drinking is but the first step away from a highly strained abnormal condition. For me, that's a nice way of putting, I was still very psychotic and deranged after I put the drink down. I was in a relationship, and I was a violent drunk. I like to break glasses in particular, a lot of dishware. I'm happy to report I have dishes now. What really frightened me is I was in this relationship, and I was still acting out like an alcoholic. And here I am not drinking. And the scary thing is I'm actually hitting the target now. So, yeah, it's not good. A doctor said to us, years of living with an alcoholic is almost sure to make any wife or child neurotic. The entire family is to some extent ill. Let families realize as they start their journey that all will not be fair weather. Each in his turn may be footsore and may straggle. I'd like to turn back right now to page 66. There's a wonderful prayer that I use from the fourth step. Bottom of page 66. This was our course. We realized that people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick. Though we did not like their symptoms and the way these disturbed us, they, like ourselves, were sick too. We asked God to help us show the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. When a person offended, we said to ourselves, this is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God, save me from being angry. Thy will not mine be done. I try to remember that prayer a lot daily, not just with my family, but with people at work, people in the fellowship, friends.
Absolutely. In practicing all these principles in all our affairs, it's been a challenge for me in my family because as we were reading this chapter, I found myself viewing it as a perspective as an alcoholic and also in a family for which a lot leads into one of the first problems where everything is swept under the rug and I was recovering and I just wanted everybody in my family to also. And we know that doesn't work that way. But on the top of page 123, where we say, suppose we tell you about some of the obstacles a family will meet. As we go through this chapter, there are some scenarios that are listed in here for which there is a problem, and then there's a suggested solution to it. So we're going to go through a few of them. The first one we saw was the family confidence in dad is rising high. The good old days will be back, they think. And at the bottom of that paragraph, it goes in to say, it will take time to clear away the wreck. Those old buildings will eventually be replaced by finer ones. New structures will take years to complete. And for me, that really showed my soul sickness. And I'm one that loves to go from A to Z, you know, and really not take the time. I want it all right now, and not only for my program, but also in my family. And there are two family members for which I could really be open about this once I felt comfortable with realizing what I truly was. And, you know, and I wanted them to get it right away. They were very accepting, but it does take time. And it says, but the wise family will admire him for what he is trying to be rather than what he is trying to get. So again, we see the principles of love and tolerance. Okay. The second one that we found was on the bottom of page 123. Now and then the family will be plagued by specters of the past. For the drinking career of almost every alcoholic has been marked by escapades, funny, humiliating, shameful, or tragic. And the first impulse will to be burying these skeletons in the dark closet and padlock the door. And we all have our stories and we all have our escapades that we can all relate to. And we see that not shutting the door on the past, but learning those experiences. And if we even turn the page, we see that Henry Ford goes in to say, he once made a wise remark to the effect that experience is the supreme value in life. And even Carl Jung saying where the gold is in the dark. And, you know, I've looked at my past experiences to really learn from them, but I have needed the help of all of you to help me interpret those because I have a very focused view, so through the help of others, we can find and help that soul sickness. We grow by our willingness to face and rectify errors and to convert them into assets. And where we see that, I mean, to me, that's speaking the fifth step right there, you know, how to right the wrongs and to go back and look at them. We think families will struggle with their problems. We think each family member, which has been relieved, owes something to those who have not. When the occasion requires, each member of it should be willing to, should be only too willing to bring former mistakes, no matter how grievous, out of their hiding places. So really, again, there's some reflection. Showing others who suffer how we were given help is the very thing which makes life seem so worthwhile to us now. Cling to the thought that in God's hands, the dark past is the greatest possession you have, the key to life and happiness for others. Okay.
Just to comment a little on the two paragraphs that Colleen just read. I love that it's true only if one is willing to turn the past to good account. For me, that's my amends process. You know, where am I with my amends? And some of the nine-step promises are really coming true for me, especially the one, no matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. And the dark past is the greatest possession you have. I can't believe what the feeling that I get when I reach out to a newcomer and I can see in their eyes when I start to talk about my past and that it actually helps them. I had a woman recently, it's interesting, once again, how God works. I was feeling a little funky and getting a little restless. And I get this call from a woman. This woman actually has the same exact story as mine. And she called me and we started talking. And she said to me, "My God, after talking to you, I feel I have some hope. That is the bright spot in my life now. That my dark, seedy, dramatic, horrible past can actually benefit somebody else is huge." And talking about sharing your past is the key to life and happiness for others. Sitting doing fifth step work. If someone told me even a year ago that I'd be spending a lot of Friday and Saturday nights doing fifth step work, I would have told them they were crazy. Today, I actually can't believe that I look forward to it, and I'm happy to do it. I mean, I don't have to be out with it. I mean, Friday night, Saturday night used to be all about a guy. And that I'm happy and peaceful and content to be working with another is just a wonderful, it's a miracle. And actually, I feel like I have a purpose. I never felt, even after I stopped drinking, that I had a purpose. I would wake up in the morning, I had no energy to get out of bed, and that has completely changed for me. I'm doing the next one?
Sure. The third one we found is, it is possible to dig up past misdeeds so they become a bright and veritable plague. When we go down to, they forgave each other and drew closer, the miracle of reconciliation was at hand. If we go up to page 125, we see new victory over hurt pride will be re-won. And that's part of the solution to that problem. And looking at into the area of the gossip, we've seen that families of Alcoholics Anonymous keep few skeletons in the closet. And when it talks about, you know, the gossip and the laughter, we found, you know, it's just damaging. But where you can share a story where it would help another, like, you know, when in sponsoring and sharing the experience, it just takes so much of the lighter load off. So that's where we found it helpful and only helpful.
Right, the line in the middle of page 125. We do talk about each other a great deal, but we almost invariably temper such talk by a spirit of love and tolerance. Again, we see that same principle. The next paragraph, we find it better when possible to stick to our own stories. So basically the solution here is stick to your own story, share from your own experience. Every once in a while, I know intimate details about Colleen and she about me, and I know when there's a woman that I'm working with, if there's something, I'll usually go to Colleen first and say, "Do you mind if I refer you to Colleen?" The bottom of the paragraph, I love this line: "We alcoholics are sensitive people." Gee, you think? It takes some of us a long time to outgrow that serious handicap. I know it was all about me. When I walked in the room when I first started coming to AA, I thought for sure everybody was talking about me and looking at me, and I was afraid to even get up to go to the bathroom because you'd all be following me. It's crazy. The next problem that's presented here in the chapter is a two-part problem. Many alcoholics are enthusiasts. They run to extremes. At the beginning of recovery, a man will take, as a rule, one of two directions. He may either plunge into a frantic attempt to get on his feet in business — that was not me — or he may be so enthralled by his new life that he talks or thinks of little else. That was me. In either case, certain family problems will arise. With these, we have experience galore.
Yes, I'll talk about, in terms of work, I did plunge into work, not even to rectify any financial issues, but for me, it was an area just for which I was just trying to make up for the past year, where I just felt like I was just falling apart and trying to put my life together back at work. I wasn't performing the way I had in the past. And it was very obvious because my numbers are very public. So I was really trying to work so hard, and it was so exhausting and expending way too much energy. And on the spiritual side, there is one story I have to say, that when Tanya and I were starting to take this message back to the area in which we live, it wasn't received so well. And I was so excited about it and didn't realize that I was prophesizing, as they called it. And one night at one of the women's meetings, a friend came to me and said, I have to speak on the fourth step tonight, and I know you know where it is in this book. Will you show me? And I'm like, yes. And she started, and she opened the meeting, and she started speaking. And the women around the table were like, oh, my God. And they could not believe that she had a big book in her hand, first of all, let alone knew where the fourth step was, and started reading from it. And one of the women's faces, I mean, literally, she slammed her hands on the table and said, not another one of you. And, I mean, and it was just like, and we just sat and laughed, you know, and you know, we've calmed down, and we know how to share the message in a better way. We've calmed down. We've been told to.
Yeah, I got phone calls at home.
But it was a great story.
You're annoying us. Stop
yeah.
it. The bottom of page 126. It is of little use to argue and only makes the impasse worse. I love, do I want to be right or do I want to be happy? Do I want to be right with God? And I have to ask myself these questions, and especially when we were talking about getting enthusiastic. I had to make an amends to a whole business meeting. I don't know if you've all been to business meetings before where I was feeling very righteous, and I, because I now have God in my life, I know how everything should run, and I need to share that with all of you. And I need to, you know, anyway, I had to do this amends this entire meeting, and it was not fun. It's not about, that was a major character defect for me, righteousness, and it's not about that anymore. I want to live at peace with people. In the middle of this paragraph, let them praise his progress. Let them remember that his drinking wrought all kinds of damage that may take long to repair. If they sense these things, they will not take so seriously as periods of crankiness, depression, or apathy, which will disappear when there is tolerance, love, and spiritual understanding. I actually started in Al-Anon, and I had a real problem in Al-Anon with the first step because I couldn't get it. But in my unconsciousness, some of the principles got stuck in my brain. One of them that I love is detach with love. And what I learned about detach with love is that if the alcoholic falls out of bed, put a blanket on him. You know, don't just step over them. But don't become a doormat. The other bit that I like is, will disappear when there is tolerance, love, and spiritual understanding. I love the concept that I'm like a spiritual mirror. And so if somebody is coming at me, it's not always easy for me to practice this, but if somebody is coming at me with anger and fear and coming at me, if I can take a deep breath and try to reflect and come from a different perspective, changing my perspective where they might be coming from in place of love and tolerance, it's amazing how that works like magic, how people will calm down. It's not always easy. Bottom of the page, As each member of a resentful family begins to see his shortcomings and admits them to others, he lays a basis for helpful discussion. There's another concept that I really love, and I'll never forget the first time I read it. It's in our 12 and 12. And it made me, whenever I hear the truth, I sometimes get like really nauseous. It is a spiritual axiom that every time we are disturbed, no matter what the cause, there's something wrong with us. And I really use that a lot. To put it in more simple terms, if you spot it, you got it. So if there's something that you're doing or saying and it's irritating me, I really have to look, and usually it's some character defect, and then underlying that is some fear. And it's a really cool concept. It's also the beginning of taking responsibility for my actions. I need to take responsibility. Top of page 128. Giving rather than getting will become the guiding principle. I love the St. Francis prayer, and one of my favorite lines is, by self-forgetting one finds. This whole process for me has been getting out of myself. It was all about me, and our book says self-centeredness must be destroyed. I can't believe how filled my life is not thinking about me, and it's so true. It's by self-forgetting that one finds.
Okay, on the top of page 129, we see that Father feels he has struck something better than gold. For a time, he may try to hug the new treasure to himself. He may not see at once that he has barely scratched a limitless lode, which will pay dividends only if he mines it for the rest of his life and insists on giving away the entire product. And that reflects just what Tanya was talking about. The more I give, the more I get. And I loved what I heard just recently as... you know, as you're, the more you give and the more I'm giving and I'm out of myself and truly helping another, God's taking care of me. And that's when, really, I'm at peace and, you know, not wrapped in myself. So that's been very helpful for even my perspective. And it goes on to say, a spiritual life which does not include his family obligations may not be so perfect after all. If a family will appreciate that Dad's current behavior is but a phase of his development, all will be well. So that's a great suggestion. Down in the middle of the page, we see Dad may feel for the rest of his drink, Dad may feel that for years his drinking has placed him on the wrong side of every argument, but that now he has become a superior person with God on his side. And we'll just reflect back to Tanya's story of making amends at a whole business meeting, but we've all been there and can share on that. Though a family does not fully agree with Dad's spiritual activities, they should let him have his head. Even if he displays a certain amount of neglect and irresponsibility towards the family, it is well to let him go as far as he likes in helping other alcoholics. And this is the spirit of absolutely serving others and just empowers my spiritual condition and makes it grow. And my family's just beginning, those who I've been able to share this with, like tonight my mom, who I was able to give this blue book, she calls it, to her for her 80th birthday, you know, and I really sat and prayed with it because I was like, my mom has always been a very spiritual person, and it was her 80th birthday, and I wanted to give her a beautiful gift. And she's one that, you know, it took a lot of time and explanation of what an alcoholic was, and she was relating to it, and she's like, there's a lot of good stuff in this blue book. And I'm like, you call it whatever you want. I'm like, and you know, and she's trying, and she even called tonight, and she was like, what time are you and Tanya on? And I was like, oh, that's all Tanya needs to hear. She has her Broadway experience. So, and she was like, I'll pray for you both. So she's really understanding, and she's just like, you've found home, haven't you? And I was just like, yeah, you know what, I have. So, and she's been able to surrender to that also because there was still so much tension, and you can just feel that energy, and her spirit was just, it was fear, and it's amazing how you can see it once you've walked through it, and that's what this program has been able to let me do. So, for that.
Speaking about moms, Colleen just reminded me, my mom, I was married to an alcoholic, and my mom was in Al-Anon at the time. She has about, I guess, 7-8 years. You know what drives me crazy, though, about Al-Anon? When they have a slip, they don't have to start counting days again. But she would be coming around my apartment, and she'd start leaving one day at a time around the ODAD, encouraged to change. And when I left that relationship and my life was spiraling out of control, I ended up back at Mom's. And then she started leaving big books around. And what's so cool is that I, having done the amends process with my mom, I was very angry and just really out of control. And we have such a beautiful relationship today. Just a few months ago, she actually went through a big book workshop with me. And she wants to, as an Al-Anon now, go through the process of the steps the way in the big book. And that's just so cool. Are we on 130?
Oh, yeah.
Page 130, one of my favorite paragraphs, slightly attached to this paragraph. Those of us who have spent much time in the world of spiritual make-believe have eventually seen the childness of it. This dream world has been replaced by a great sense of purpose, accompanied by growing consciousness of the power of God in our lives. We have come to believe he would like us to keep our heads in the cloud with him, but that our feet ought to be firmly planted on earth. That is where our fellow travelers are, and that is where our work must be done. These are the realities for us, for we have found nothing incompatible between a powerful spiritual experience and a life of sane and happy usefulness. I love this paragraph. To me, it's spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. I can read this big book all day long, be at home in my room with all my spiritual books, but how am I living this? How am I with at work, with my friends, with my family? And I love that I see my friends. So Amy comes into town, I love this. She said, I've asked God to help me see where I can be of service while I'm here. I mean, I love the conversation and the talk between us. And Colleen, I can cry. She sleeps with her cell phone next to her bed just in case a newcomer calls. It's beautiful.
Okay. One more suggestion. I'll take from you. Nothing will help. The man who is off on a spiritual tangent so much as a wife who adopts a sane spiritual program, making a better practical use of it. You know, in joining where we can share, I have a sister who is going through some challenges and. Just looking at the family, my father passed away 18 years ago, and I'm not going to make any or draw any conclusions, but he fits a lot of characteristics of a dry drunk that's explained in this book. And so I'm starting to understand my family a lot better, and from that, my sister called, and she's 18 years older than I am, and was talking to me, and she knows I'm in the program. She was one who really supported anything that I do. And she was in a lot of fear, in a lot of just a very difficult time of her life. And, you know, I really called Tanya and I shared with my sponsor, Mary Beth, you know, what can I do to help her? I've never been to an Al-Anon meeting. Is this something that might be suggested? And, you know, I just sat and prayed and I sent her my 12 and 12. And, you know, in the beginning of that book, it really starts with, you know, that this book is more than for just the alcoholic. And I sent it off to her, and I said, you know, with my prayers and love, you know, I share this with you, and call me if you have any questions. And she's just starting to look at it and read it and really come into it and see how she can help herself and her family. So, that's also picking up another spiritual program. Hmm.
Okay. Drinking isolates most homes from the outside world. Father may have laid aside for years all normal activities, clubs, civic duties, and sports. When he renews interest in such things, a feeling of jealousy may arise. The family may feel they hold a mortgage on Dad, so big that no equity should be left for outsiders. Instead of developing new channels of activities for themselves, mother and children demand that he stay at home and make up for the deficiency. So years of living with the alcoholic, I know for me personally, all my focus was on the alcoholic. I really didn't have a life, and Al-Anon was helpful for starting to take the focus on myself and get a life. And I had an opportunity a few months ago to see Bill's story, and there's a cute little bit. It's so cute. Lois gets to speak about what it was like after Bill gets sober, and she was saying there was all these alcoholics all over the home, and nobody was paying attention to her. She didn't feel like she had anything to do anymore. You know, the focus, Bill was getting better, and she said, I got so angry, I threw a shoe. And I'm like, that's all? I've thrown a lot worse than a shoe. So some of the suggestions in this chapter to try to get the family involved wherever possible. There's Alateen, and if you can, with some meetings, you can bring the family, celebrations and whatnot. Okay. Is it me?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Page 132, second paragraph, a few lines down. But we aren't a glum lot. If newcomers could see no joy or fun in our existence, they wouldn't want it. We absolutely insist on enjoying life. We try not to indulge in cynicism over the state of nations, nor do we carry the world's trouble on our shoulders. When we see a man sinking into the mire that is alcoholism, we give him first aid and place what we have at his disposal. And I have to ask myself, do I have a spiritual kit of tools to pass on to a newcomer? Have I gone through this process? What do I have to give away? I never thought like going to an AA, a sober dance, would be like a highlight. I mean, and this Saturday coming up, road trips. These things are so much fun, really the highlights of my life. It's amazing. Next paragraph down. So we think cheerfulness and laughter make for usefulness. Outsiders are sometimes shocked when we burst into merriment over a seemingly tragic experience out of the past. But why shouldn't we laugh? We have recovered and have been given the power to help others. I love the line, our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service. And again, I have to ask myself, is this my experience? Am I helping others, not just in AA? What am I doing to keep spiritually fit? Am I enlarging my spiritual life? Top of page 133. We are sure God wants us to be happy, joyous, and free. I was so excited when I saw that line. I'm like, there it is. I have to admit, I really mostly am happy, joyous, and free. I have problems. I have a couple situations in my life right now. One, a medical situation. I'm also contemplating a huge move to follow a dream that's very far away. It looks like it's going to happen. And I'm going to be okay. I have that feeling now that everything is going to be okay, that I'm going to be taken care of.
And in that, someone who's here tonight, last Thursday night, the meeting that a few of us started, we were sharing that Tanya was thinking of moving, and this person said, but that's your buddy, and you're not sad? And I said, you know, a year and a half ago, before I walked through this door, I would have been in tears, and I would have hidden that with anger and fear, and I would have just tried to amputate her out of my life because I would have been so scared, you know. And I'm like, my best friend is moving away, and I'm just like, I'm so happy for her, you know, because I know this is Tanya's passion and what she wants to do. And I'm just like, you know, it's just so beautiful, the gift of this program, you know. I'm like, that we can absolutely have the direction and spiritual guidance inside to know that everything's going to be all right and we can go. And I'll visit you in Michigan.
Yeah.
So it's just...
You can get a lot more for your money there.
Okay. Total turn.
That's what I'm excited about. We cannot subscribe to the belief that this life is a veil of tears, though it once was just that for many of us. How true is that? But it is clear that we made our own misery. God didn't do it. Avoid, then, the deliberate manufacture of misery. After I did my fourth step, I realized that my problems were of my own making. When I get into trouble, it's some part of myself that's misdirected. For me, the two big ones are financial insecurity and emotional insecurity. So I have to take a look at that. And I love this line, avoid then the deliberate manufacture of misery. So if I'm doing a regular nightly inventory and checking, I'm staying on top of and not setting the ball rolling on a daily basis. Mm-hmm.
And now about health. A body badly burned by alcohol does not often recover overnight, nor do twisted thinking and depression vanish in a twinkling. And there again, just this whole mental obsession is key for me. We are convinced that a spiritual mode of living is the most powerful health restorative. I love that line because, you know, it just shows me how I can run off to the races with my will. And when it's my will, it's totally out of control and I'm totally in fear and I'm having anxiety. But it goes on to say, which is so true, that God has abundantly supplied this world with fine doctors, psychologists, and practitioners of various kinds. God has wrought miracles with us, and we should never belittle a good doctor or psychiatrist. So, it's a very good solution.
Colleen gave me this paragraph. I don't know why. The next paragraph is about sex problems, being impotent. I don't have that problem. Actually, probably in reverse. No. Some of the solutions here are don't hesitate in consulting a doctor. And all I can tell you, my experience, if you have sex problems, I know that page 69 offers a lot of solutions. Dealing with hurt children is the next problem. And it's about being a power of example. I don't have children, but I know that I've heard many beautiful stories. Debbie, here in the front row, she has a beautiful story about her son. And I've heard from many alcoholics that after being in this program and living the solution, just being a power of example, how many relationships are repaired over the years. It doesn't necessarily happen right away, but that's the miracle of it. The top of page 135, whether the family goes on a spiritual basis or not, the alcoholic member has to if he would recover. To me, that's like a warning that I have to. My solution is God. Maybe the rest of my family doesn't have to find God, and I don't have to tell them that anymore. But for me, if I want to recover, I need to find God. Seeing is believing to most families who have lived with a drinker. Again, actions speak louder than words. I'd like to skip down to the bottom of page 135, three mottos that are apropos. First things first. For me, that's putting a loving God first. I put God first in my life now. I worshipped many, many things. I worshipped men. I worshipped money. I worshipped power. I put all these things first, all these things on the exterior first, and I ended up miserable. And believe me, I feel like I was there is a hell, and I was living it on earth. A lot of the hell also for me was up here in my mind. I've also had to turn that over to God on a daily basis. Every morning I ask God to please direct my thinking and guide my thoughts so that I can be of service and get me out of the way. Live and let live. When I looked at this, I looked at the first part, live, and again, my life is so full. I love the saying, carpe diem, seize the day. You know, I have a ring on my finger, it says live in the present. And that's all that's all I really have. Because if I'm in the future, I'm in fear. If I'm in the past, I'm not present and I can't do God's work. And let live, there are a lot of people that aren't living the way I want them to. And I know there's a saying that I've heard Mary Beth say and Howard and some of my teachers, let the whirling dervishes whirl. Let them go. I don't have to try to fix people anymore. Easy does it. I love this. In step three, I made a decision to stop playing God. And getting out of the way now, I don't burn up energy foolishly. When I was trying to arrange life to suit myself and all of you, to do what I wanted you to do. I was exhausted. It was exhausting to try to wake up every day and manufacture this world that I thought if it looks good on the outside, I'll be happy. And it's really an inside job for me now. And how I work at that daily is prayer and meditation. And, you know, I love some of the promises at the end of step 11. I'm in less chance now of being fear, anxious, and worry, and I have more energy. And it works. It really does. Thanks for letting me share. I guess we'll open it up now.